Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, we've got some win streaks happening in the NBA, and we examine what they mean. The Los Angeles Lakers, they've won six straight, top five on both ends of the floor. How real is this? The Atlanta Hawks, now up to 10 straight wins, the first time doing so in over a decade. How real is this? We talk about award stuff. Is the Luka MVP case getting loud? Is the Wemby MVP case getting loud? Is Kawhi Leonard pushing for an all-NBA first team selection if he's healthy enough? We talk about that too. And then we close with more Team USA talk. A little bit of a coaching shift. Carl Lawson went back to Duke. Nate Tibbetts takes over. Some lineup tweaks. We talk about what we've seen over the last two games. And we examine what the 28 Olympic roster could look like. Who's earned themselves more consideration with what we've seen so far? We have a fun conversation coming your way. Stay tuned. Lock in with us. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy St. Patrick's Day. How the heck are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. The hoops keeps going. I'm ready to hoop it up with you, Nikias. Oh, yeah, man.
You're bringing Booker T to the Gosh Darn Podcast, but okay, we are indeed excited to talk about basketball. Steve, we have some winning streaks happening across the league, and it kind of fit into the bubble of this is impressive, but what does it mean if we're taking like the 10,000 foot view? So I kind of want to dig in on a couple of teams that are streaking right now. And before getting into that, I want to quickly say, OKC, we see you. We talked about you last week. We talked about Shea on Friday. You have the longest win streak in the Western Conference right now. You continue to win games and be dominant while doing so, despite missing a whole bunch of bodies. I promise we respect y'all. Best team in the league, still my title favorite. Want to give you your respect at the top of the show. As for these teams that are kind of throwing me for a little bit of a loop, I'm intrigued, but it's like I don't want to dip. I can dip the toe in, can't dip the full foot in yet. I'm just kind of watching, trying to examine what this all means. In the Western Conference, Steve, we talked about the Los Angeles Lakers and really the 3-6 block in the Western Conference back on February 24th. And at the time, it's like, okay, the offense is good. We've seen it be elite. It needs to be more elite. We'd like to see the defense be better than what it's been. You brought up the point that, hey, the offense probably matters more to this conversation than people are giving credit for. Like, you can't afford slippage in light of what the defensive personnel is. And we fast forward 3 weeks, and the Los Angeles Lakers are 9-3 since we had that conversation. Per Clean the Glass, third in offense, fifth in defense, second in net rating during that time. Within that 12-game stretch, they have won six games in a row, and they are coming off of an impressive win over the Houston Rockets. And in that six-game winning streak, fifth in offense, fourth in defense, second in net rating, sweep the homestand to beat the Houston Rockets on the road. No Alperen Şengün, but still an impressive win nonetheless. And so with that, the biggest shift from their overall profile, where again, top 10 offense, bottom 10 defense, the biggest shift has come from their defense, where they've been in the top five. So the question I wanted to pose to you, Steve, is has anything in particular moved you or popped more on film? Or is this just an example of we are doing the things we've been trying to get to? And this is what it can look
like. This is the build. Like, I think so many times when it comes to a team in a season, you're expecting the high-end result to happen all the time, right? Or you're looking at a team and what they can do, and when they don't get there, you're saying, ooh, I don't think they can get there. There's a formula for every team to win in the NBA, and the Lakers have a very specific formula, and they're refining it to a degree. The reason why people say, hey, no one wants to deal with LeBron, Luka, and Austin Reeves in a playoff series is on display, because even in the moments where the offense hasn't been at 10 out of 10, it's at least gotten to 8 out of 10. We've been able to hit pressure points. We can keep pressure on you. And then defensively, I think what you've seen during this stretch is a team, and this is the ceiling in the playoffs to a degree, where, hey, we know exactly what we want to do defensively. And we have a game plan that we're going to execute. Doesn't mean it's going to work all the time, but we're going to do these very specific things. And we've seen kind of the impact of Marcus Smart, right? And his ability to defend multiple players and his ability to raise the compete level of the Los Angeles Lakers. And we've been able to see them, okay, we're mixing and switching. And so we're going to mix in an ability to kind of switch, kind of help. Well, we're not afraid to put a wing on a center. We're not afraid to try and take away driving lanes. We're not afraid to play smaller if we need to. We have more lineup versatility to a degree to where if DeAndre Ayton doesn't have it or Hayes doesn't have it, we can go small. We can go small in different ways, and we can kind of maintain the space. And then we still have Luka Doncic, who you have to deal with, and how do you want to cover him? So on those nights where, hey, what do we do? You know, okay, we're going to be in drop. Luka pokes at that. We're going to be putting two on the ball, get up a little bit higher. Luka pokes at that. We're going to switch. Luka pokes at that. Okay, well, now we're in trouble. Now we have to deal with LeBron. Austin Reeves has him going. So the combination for me, when they are humming offensively, or at least to a point where you don't feel comfortable, and then defensively, we have a clear focus. We have a clear game plan. We're taking away driving lanes. We're rotating. Because even that win over Houston, it wasn't – I don't think it was their best defensive effort. But it was them being able to be versatile enough to get in the mud and get into a fight and win. I think that's important. Like, I think the biggest thing that's been impressive to me during this Lakers stretch is their ability to win in different ways. Mm-hmm. We can go high scoring. We can get into a rock fight. We can figure things out. And they did it over Houston, Denver, Minnesota. And I know the Lakers are playing well because my mentions are the Lakers are delivering belt, even though they lost to Denver like 12 days ago. But Laker Nation is rising again. So, yeah, they're just showcasing what their high ceiling is, and they're doing it the right time of year.
Yeah, I think it's been good stuff. Hilarious that your mentions have been an interesting place. I feel like your mentions are always an interesting place, but that's another rant. Yeah, people need to leave Steve alone. I'm not going to do that on this podcast today, though. To the defense, I agree with what you've said. Like, I think this is an example of something that you talk about all the time. Like, when we have not just a game plan, but when we have buy-in to our game plan, the effort level generally rises. And I think what I had in my notes on a basic level before I get into all my numbers and stuff I have typed up, but what I have in my notes is more consistent effort from the stars. I think Luka has played harder defensively and more consistently. I think LeBron has bought in and played harder and more consistently from an effort perspective. And you're really seeing that pop off the ball. Like, how often do we see LeBron die for a loose ball to the degree that he did a couple of nights ago? Like, that's just a flashball moment. But
the dive against Denver, that was a big time play. Like, him and Marcus Smart made a lot of big time plays down the stretch, but LeBron almost, I know he felt that. I know he still feels that to this day. That dive right now, I know he does.
Yeah, it's still on the side. But, like, that's just a very loud example of, like, oh, we're not getting November LeBron off ball defensively, where he's standing straight up and it's like, okay, LeBron, you're pointing in your quarterback and things. We kind of need you to move, too. He's doing more of that stuff as he's came back, what, 3 games ago at this point, came back in the Chicago game, the same one where Luka had 51, 10, and 9 in that basketball game. But the star effort in general has been better. As you mentioned, Marcus Smart, Jade LaRavia, the role guys in general have taken on the challenge of tough assignments, to your point about being able to cross-match and take different things away. And they're making extra effort games. Like, in that Houston game, Jade LaRavia was not the player of the game for very obvious reasons. But he made so many hustle plays on both ends of the floor in that game, particularly in the first half. It's just like, well, this is kind of what they've been getting from him for most of the year, honestly. Like, I may be overtasked defending this number one option, but I'm going to be physical. If he's coming off of a screen or coming off a pin down or something, I'm getting into the body early. Like, he is doing all the little things to make things more difficult. And when you have a collective effort around those kind of things, this is where you can get this kind of productivity. And as you zoom out with this winning streak, again, they've been a top five defense during this run. They have faced multiple top 10 offenses in this stretch, Steve. Faced the New York Knicks, who are third in offensive rating right now per clean the glass. Minnesota's 10th. Denver has the best offense in the league. Houston, heading into last night's game, was 9th. And they've now slid to 11th, but it's like a virtual tie with them, Minnesota, and Detroit with a 117.1. It's like, these are multiple good offenses that they have faced that they have been able to do this to. And something that we've talked about also on this podcast is this zone from the Los Angeles Lakers is an interesting one. It's something that you've talked about in particular that broken down both here and on your timeline. But them being able to mix in these looks, and teams still are trying to figure out, like, what exactly in this, because it just morphs the man. And then it's like, okay, well, then what are we going to do? And if you're trying to set up, I'll go back to the Minnesota game where Ant dribbles up the right side of the floor. Here comes Luke Kennard or someone just already pre-rotating to the other side. It's like, well, okay, So is this just man and you're just already kind of sending an early double to make sure he sees a crowd? Is this actually zone? Like, what are we doing here? The backline communication within that has been strong. And so the fact that they've been able to mix in the zone, in addition to what you've already said about mixing in the switches and the cross matches and things, like, they're hitting a lot of notes defensively. Like, I don't think they are a top five unit overall, but, like, this has been super impressive to me.
Do they have to be a top five unit? If the question that's holding people back the Lakers is, ooh, they can't defend, do they have to be top five? Or can they just do their job? And I think that's where the Lakers have stood out. So to your point with the zone thing, the most important thing outside of, like, okay, we can junk it up, we can make you think, we can get you deeper in the clock, it still sticks to their principles. And so to me, in the NBA, the best zones are a blend of we are playing zone, but this is also what we do naturally. Like, we think Miami, hey, yeah, it's zone, but we're also matching up. We're able to rotate. We're able to fly around within our zone. For the Lakers, it's, you know, we want to switch, right? And you know we want to show early help, right? We're doing that without necessarily telling you that right away. So we've now shaved off 6 seconds, and we're doing what we want to do anyways. And I think it's being able to, if you're going to navigate during the playoffs, you're going to have to be able to have multiple things you can do defensively, or multiple things you could throw at a team, especially when it comes to star players. And so we got to throw you different looks. We got to throw you different coverages, different matchups. And so, yeah, you're going to get the activity of Marcus Smart. You might get a switch. But if you get that switch, we're going to show early help. It might be switch and double, as they did against Houston. They threw all that in the second half because that third quarter didn't look great. Houston was like, ah, is that a big on Amen Thompson? Well, guess what? No more pick and roll. You'd be a handoff hub and a screener. And then it's Luka and LeBron on the weak side together. And it's like, interesting. I don't know what's going on here. And then the Lakers are like, you know what? Let's switch it up a little bit. And so now we've got more switching. Now we're showing early help. Now we're taking things off the table. I think for the Lakers, the biggest thing they have to do defensively is try to take things off the menu for offensive teams, if that makes sense. Get themselves to a point where, well, what you think is a weak point tonight is not a weak point for us, and now you're searching for something else. So if people are mad at Houston for, hey, why'd you only run Kevin Durant pick and roll, because they knew they were going to get two on the ball, and contrary to Rockets fans' belief, which, by the way, full circle moment for y'all, but boy, this stinks. We can't get anyone to get two on the ball. Two on the ball isn't really a good thing because you guys need to stop. I'm going to tell you right now. So y'all need to quit it. Anyways, y'all need to put the basketball down, every single one of y'all. But they are now able to kind of have this versatility where DeAndre Ayton can switch on certain players. We can go small. We can do different things. We can kind of keep ourselves within our base. So now you're not thinking about running some of these sets that you normally would, or putting just Luka in action. You know, we can take that off the table. We make you think and do something else. That's to our advantage. We get stops, we run. So even in a night where we're not really scoring that much, we're struggling a little bit. Austin Reeves not having a great night. Luka's a little bit off. Well, we're getting stops. And that's what we said a few weeks ago. If the defense raises up, boy, they got a little bit more margin for error. And if they have more margin for error, that's not a team you want to deal with LeBron James, Luka Doncic, and Austin Reeves.
Yeah, I want to quickly hit the Houston bit because, one, that was just a very funny game. And watching that third quarter in particular, and even kind of the end of the second heading into the third, it was like, ooh, so this is happening again, huh? Because if you remember that Christmas Day matchup between the Lakers and the Rockets, it was like, oh, this is interesting for the first 3 minutes. And then the Rockets were like, actually, we're faster than y'all. We're bigger than y'all. We're more athletic than y'all. You're not going to have a good time with us. Here are your turnovers. Here are our transition baskets. This game is over with. And so with the tide starting to turn a little bit in that second and into that third, I was like, oh, boy, the Rockets are starting to get comfortable. Here's some offensive rebounding for you. As you mentioned, Amen Thompson getting comfortable. This has been a fun offensive stretch for Amen Thompson. That's a late, by the way. It's like, all right, cool. But for the Lakers, kind of dig in, like, let's find some answers. To your point, let's get into the switching. Let's get into these double teams. It did kind of annoy me from the Houston perspective, to be completely honest with you. Like, I want to give grace because there's no Alperen Sengun on top of this. So, like, it was easier for the Lakers to say, hey, let's just double KD because we trust the other guys to consistently beat us 4-on-3. So I think it's a smart gambit from the Lakers. And the Rockets not having their best or second best player, in this case, in Sengun, I think that does hurt the optionality there. but like so many reps where I'm just like, how do you not have a better answer than this? How's it take, more than anything, how is it taking this long to get into some of this stuff? Like, why are these double teams hitting KD with four on the clock? It felt like every time. It's like, hey.
Oh no. I don't want to cut you off, brother, but let's talk about it. Okay. Houston is a methodical offense. Some of that, a lot of people will say it's the coach. Please look at the guards and their dribble animations as they get into plays. Every single one of them has to hit some version of a tween hezzy before they come off a pick and roll. That complicates things. And so for me, Houston has to up the tempo, start these actions earlier and give yourself a better opportunity so the double, as you said, doesn't come later in the clock. That's something you can fix, but they have to fix it. Mm-hmm. And so if you are taking 8 seconds to figure out who's going to screen who, and then finally say, okay, Kevin Durant, go screen from Reed Sheppard, and then they switch, they get it to KD, there's 8 on the clock, and now the Lakers double. Yeah, you are handing the Lakers an opportunity to double. Now, to the Lakers' credit, they did a really good job of mixing in their timing. And I think that's where you get into narrative stuff, and you just want to hammer that narrative home. We want to bang that narrative home. The Rockets can't run. They can't run offense. Why wouldn't you make an adjustment? They had an advantage. You need these reps to understand it. How many times have the Rockets really been used to playing advantage basketball? How many of these Houston Rockets players have been used to being able to beat closeouts? It's not a regular thing for them. Contrast that with the Orlando game earlier when they won on against Orlando on Prime. They had the mix. Once they got a team in rotation, things were good to go. But they were slow. The Lakers hit 2 on the ball. And now, okay, well, Reed Sheppard can shoot. Tari Easton can shoot. If you're both going to do the, well, I don't have a shot swing, well, I'm going to drive, you put yourself into a box, and this is a learning experience. That's the thing about the regular season. You got to remember, folks, it's a learning experience. You're thinking, oh, well, this is game, da-da-da-da-da. This should be da-da-da-da-da. It's not always how it works. Sometimes you have a bad day at the office. Sometimes you're throwing something that that hurts you. Every playoff series, you are presented a problem, and one team just can't figure it out. To this day, Nikias, I mourn being in Memphis. We lost to the Spurs in 4 straight games in the conference finals because they decided we are literally only guarding 2 people. The adjustments were there. We couldn't make plays. that's basketball. That is basketball. It is infuriating sometimes because you can see exactly what's happening and you don't make a defense pay and you lose. It sucks. Basketball's hard. I understand the spreadsheets. I understand the expected outcome. I understand what you think should happen. Sometimes it doesn't happen. You think I wanted this? It just happened. Oh,
I was not expecting us to get here on this podcast. We are off the rails early. But no, like, I think that is important content to say, and something that you always say, Steve, when you're evaluating teams or evaluating players, young rookies, etc. Like, take notes of what you're successful with or what this player is successful with or this team is successful with. Take notes on what's bothering them and then kind of track of it. And so within that lens, I understand frustration from Rocket fans where it's like, hey, why are we still this slow? And before getting into the double teams and what that looked like, because as you mentioned, against Orlando, we get you in rotation, we get 2 on the ball in some capacity, we're good. Against the Lakers in that fourth quarter, it was not good. Like, sometimes that just happens. But to the tempo point, it's like, okay, why are we still having tempo problems this late into the season? Like, I think that's a fair thing to worry about. And like, as you project to the playoffs, like, hey, if we ain't fixed this by now, and this is, to your point, like, it should be a simple fix, as the Lakers, like, they'll sprinkle it in more when they get to some of the subs or when Marcus Smart just wants to be annoying. But the Lakers aren't like the Blazers in terms of we are going full court press all the time or something like that. It wasn't that for the Rockets consistently in that fourth quarter to where we're bogging you down behind half court. So like, hey, if this is this easy without the pressure, why is this still taking this long? I think that's fair. And I think just double playing out 4-on-3s and stuff like that, that is a result-based thing. Like, you just want to see that be more successful, more consistently. I think that's fair. But, like, to your point, Steve, put it in the notes. Let's see what it looks like the next time a team tries to do that. And let's see if the Rockets are ready to handle that, especially when Şengün comes back. So I think that part is going to be interesting. Want to zoom out a little. Go ahead.
Before you zoom out, I just want to say this one thing. Sometimes the thing you criticize can end up playing well in your favor down the line. Because even though you didn't win that game against the Lakers, you were still in it for a very long time, despite not really performing well offensively. And part of Houston's formula secretly is the ability to control tempo. We saw that last year in the playoffs. Hey, we're really good defensively. Hey, we're methodical. We score. You're not really having a good time. And in the playoffs, traditionally, Nikias, what's the cliche?
It gets slower in the playoffs. It gets tired in the playoffs.
And so who has had more reps with slower offense than the Houston Rockets? So at some point, this may come to your benefit is all I'm saying. I understand the criticisms. I understand the anger. But the secret sauce is this team against switching and them not having the reps against two on the ball.
They got to figure that out. All right, last things for me on the Lakers, just on the numbers front for me. Mentioned the zone. They played zone on roughly 8% of their possessions during this win streak. That is third only to the Miami Heat and the Philadelphia 76ers during that stretch. 0.8 points per possession on trips featuring the Lakers in zone during this stretch. I think you take that if you are the Los Angeles Lakers. To the point about the late double teams against Kevin Durant. This Lakers group has not been a team under J.J. Redick that generally likes putting two on the ball. This is something that you pointed out very early on. And if you have listened to J.J. on a podcast before, him taking the Laker job, it's like, hey, I don't really love putting two on the ball if I can help it. And so the fact that last year there were 18 games where they logged a double team rate above 10% of possessions or 10% of touches. 18. They're already at 25 this year, Steve. They have ramped that up. And this is still while being the switchiest team in basketball per second spectrum. And so you have the switching, you have the zone, you have the cross-matching in general that helps with the switching. And then, sporadically, if we need to put two on the ball, we'll do that. And so, like, the fact that they are pressing a bunch of different buttons at different times, it's important for them to get those reps. It's obviously helping them win right now, but this is something that, as you project for the playoffs, part of having more wiggle room is having options to give you said wiggle room. So it's a good thing that they're exploring with that. The question that I wanted to ask you before we got out of here with the Lakers, so Luka Doncic, as of recording, nearly 33 points per game. That is first in the league. 58 on twos, 36 on threes, 77% from the free throw line. And he's getting to the line quite a bit. 8 boards, 8.5 assists, a steal and a half per game. I personally have been quieter on the Luka MVP thing because of how I track it, where I'm looking at the 65 game threshold, and Luka for most of the season has been below the 9% of games played threshold. And so it's more so been he is having a great year. Here are some of the quibbles I have about defense, whatever. But in terms of the actual MVP conversation, I haven't brought him up that much because he hasn't been eligible for most of the year because of injuries and things. He has played over 82% of the Lakers games at this point in the season. So he is on pace to be eligible. Where are you at with the Luka Doncic MVP case?
The same place I've been at. I don't know exactly where he's at in the five, but he's in the five. I said this here, I'll say it again. Hear me once, hear me twice, hear me thrice. It's some combination of Shea, Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic, Victor Wembanyama, and Cade Cunningham. Some jumbled order of those five players, if they're all eligible, will be your MVP candidates, will be your all-NBA first team. Luka's been insane. It's hard to deny what he's done, especially as the Lakers continue to win. He pokes at everything you want to do defensively, and he continues to score all the time. So, yeah, he's playing at a super high level. Where are you at with him is the question that I have.
I think he is in my five, especially if he, again, remains healthy enough to be eligible. I think he has earned the right to just be in the five. He's been that good. 33-8-9, this is nuts. He's fifth in EPM among players that have logged at least 50 games, if you care about that. He's only behind Shea, Jokic, Wimby, and Kawhi Leonard. The thing that has always thrown me for a loop within the actual Luka case, like putting the games played aside right now, is like trying to parse through like the defense portion of this, because especially early on in the year when the Lakers were not close to you know, the level they're performing defensively right now. Luka was a part of the reason why the defense was the way that it was. Effort stuff, on-ball, consistent effort there, off-ball tentativeness, transition defense, whatever. He factored into that. A lot of the positive case that I saw about Luka early on, again, setting aside the games played right now, was this Lakers personnel is what it is. LeBron's missed time. Reeves missed time. The Lakers are still in the top four, top five in the West. They're winning all these clutch games. And I was like, okay, that's true. He is carrying this offensive load. You actually look at what he's doing in the clutch, and this is not the case that I would be making if I were a Laker fan. I would not be using the clutch argument, the clutch wins argument, because Luka hasn't been usual Luka in clutch games, at least early on in the year he wasn't. Now, he is fresh off the game winner against Denver. So, like, that has obviously perked up as of late. But just thinking, again, earlier in the season, I was like, okay, I don't know what to do with this. You count now, has the box score. The Lakers are in the three seed right now. The Lakers are 5.2 points per 100 possessions better with Luka on the floor. It's a plus 3.4 with Amon. It's a minus 1.8 with Amon, which is solid. But then you compare that, the plus 5.2, to other MVP candidates. And it's like, Shea is plus 9.1. I think you take that in addition to just what the Thunder have done this year. So, like, you take the Shea portion of the program. With Jokic, it's plus 15.2. With Wimby, it's plus 15.4. With Cade, I think that's also in the double digits. It's just like, ooh. So, like, Luka has been great, but I'm also comparing him to these other cases. And this is without mentioning, like, I think the Jaylen Brown case has just kind of slid. I think he's just firmly, you are in the All-NBA discussion. But I don't know what the MVP portion is going to look like at this point. Even Cade, it feels like the noise has gotten a little bit quiet around him. But as you mentioned, like, he should firmly be in, like, the top five conversation at the very least. We talked about Donovan Mitchell earlier this year. Like, there have been a lot of names you can toss in. And so, like, I'm trying to figure out, like, how high I would have Luka right now. So I think you could argue him as high. For me, like, I probably, if I'm saying, like, ceiling and floor, like, he's probably as high as three for me. And I could also argue him, like, five or six. It's kind of like the range for Luka for me right now, since he's on pace to be eligible. I'll probably land four. I think is where I'd have him.
So you said all of these numbers to pick the one number you didn't say. That's
what you that's what you mean? Hey, look,
I can do three. I can do five or six. So I probably do four.
I think the range is that's how I feel. But I think Luka is firmly, like, playing himself into more of this conversation. He's been nuts. And, like, last thing I'll say. Because we talked about, like, some of the rim pressure for him early on this year, but it didn't really matter to that point because he was making like 60% of his twos anyway, and the mid-range scoring has just been insane. We are in the middle of March and it is still insane. He is still converting 57-58% of his twos, and it just does not matter. Just even looking at the early portion of that Rockets game, he's seeing some Tari Eason, he's seeing some Amen Thompson. It just does not matter. We're just sprinkling in these floaters and these push shots and these turnarounds. Like, he is special offensive player, but the shot making in particular has been nuts for him. So I just kind of want to get a temperature check.
Beat the buzzer. Yahoo Fantasy Bracket Mayhem brackets are now open for your shot at 50K. Fill out your men's and women's brackets for a chance to win 25K in both tournaments. Visit yahoofantasy.com/bracket mayhem to fill out your brackets now.
Thank you for that, Steve. Excellent. Excellent job on the promo there. We're going to take a quick break following that. And when we return, we play a little game of Is This Real? We talk about the Atlanta Hawks who can't winning right now. And I have some player/award questions that I want to toss Steve's way. So stay tuned. And we are back with this episode of The Dunker Spot. And Steve, it is time to talk about the team that actually has the longest win streak in the NBA right now. That is the Atlanta Hawks. Now, back when we talked about the Hawks a couple weeks ago, they had won four straight. They had beaten Brooklyn. They had beaten the Wizards twice. They beat the Blazers without their top two creators. And I asked you, like, hey, how you feel about this? I know some people are going to quibble about the schedule. And you were immediately like, hey, I raised my hand. We've seen this. We know what the offensive flow looks like. The defense just has to hit a level. Let's see it. Since then, they still have not lost. They are 6-0 since we last talked about the Atlanta Hawks, bringing the win streak to 10. This is their first game win streak they've had since the 2014-15 season, which, funny year that was for Nakai as the basketball analyst, because later that year, I wrote a very detailed article heading into that Hawks-Cavs series, where I was like, you know what? The Hawks are going to get it done. Or here are like the five or six reasons why it's going to happen. And then LeBron James very loudly said, LOL, and got the Hawks out of here. So, like, not my best moment. But either way, it's been a while since the Hawks have won like this. So the question I want to pose to you, Steve, as over the last six, beat the Bucks on the road, had Giannis, no KPJ. They beat the Sixers, no Embiid, no VJ, no PG. Beat Brooklyn, no MPJ. Beat Milwaukee again, this time without Giannis. Beat Orlando in a pretty big win last night in a normal Monday night basketball game. Has any of these six wins from the Atlanta Hawks moved you at all? Or are you still in a similar, hey, they're taking care of business, that's fine?
No, not moved. I'm so sorry.
Whoop-de-doo.
They won nine home games against non-great teams. They just got to the 8th seed. They went from 10-16 at home to 19-16 at home. I'm not moved by this from the Atlanta Hawks. And the reason why I'm not moved by it is that what's changed? Okay. Hey, we're good offensively. I knew that. Hey, when we defend, you aren't going to win. I also knew that. CJ McCollum, bucket getter, knew that. Nikhil Alexander-Walker having a great year, knew that. Hey, Dyson Daniels plays defense, knew that. Onyeka Okongwu was making threes, knew that. You got to play someone. Talk to me on March 25th and March 27th when they go at Detroit, at Boston. But no, I'm so sorry. This little nine-game homestand winning streak of, we beat Brooklyn, and then we beat Washington twice, and we beat Portland, and then, we beat Milwaukee, and we beat the Sixers. The Sixers. They might as well be the 6-7ers.
No
Then we
shot.
Beat Dallas. No. Then we beat the Nets. Then we beat the Bucks. Then we beat the Magic. Yeah, not moved. So sorry.
The Mavericks had 6-7ers.
Seveners.
I cannot believe you got that off. But listen, the Mavericks had all their folks. The Sixers still had Tyree. The Orlando Magic still had Paolo. And the Magic were on a long win streak of their own heading into this matchup. And the Hawks thoroughly got them out of here. So, like, I hear you. But, like, I think we can give them a little bit more than that. I think you give them a little bit more than that. I think for me, the fun part is I kind of go through some of the players that have played well. Like you mentioned, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, career high game for him against Orlando Magic. The shot making was incredibly fun and prolific. But more than anything, like the way that he moved off ball in that game, to your point, like we've seen conceptually what Atlanta wants to get to, but like it really popped in this Orlando matchup. And I really kind of wanted to hang on the Orlando matchup for a minute there. One, it is the most recent one. Again, the Magic were on a big win streak and the Hawks strapped it, so that's impressive. But like I went into that matchup and I mentioned that matchup when we talked about him a couple weeks ago. Like, hey, I want to see what that game in particular looks like because Orlando has this collective size. They have this level of switchability that they can tap into and have been tapped over the past month or so. And then early in this game, you see the size, you see the switching, you see a bunch of unders. And the Hawks had counters for just about all of it. And, like, that was the most impressive thing for me from that game. And, like, overall, like, there has been, and it's similar to what I said last time we talked about them, I have been pretty impressed with the process from the Atlanta Hawks during this stretch. Like, the opponent quality is what it is. The fact that there is a level of problem solving happening with this group and a level of flow that they're able to maintain with their offense, I think deserves a little bit of praise. And, like, even to the CJ point, this hasn't been the best shot-making stretch for him. Like, his shooting splits have not been very good. However, he does still draw a level of attention offensively. And the fact that he's been able to help maintain their flow with his ball movement, with his screening, with his relocation, like that all slots into what they're doing offensively. And I think he deserves praise for that as well. Look, go ahead.
Brother, you selling me on the Hawks and you still, CJ still caught a stray for the fifth consecutive year of this podcast.
What do you mean?
Yeah, but the Hawks been great. We should respect them. CJ, them shooting splits. Oh boy. But you ain't gonna say nothing about Killian Hayes. It's fine. It's
fine. What you on. Mean?
Continue on.
Those splits look eerily similar right now. That's not what you want. But the point that I wanted to make was less that the splits are bad, CJ's bad. It's more he has not shot at the level that we are accustomed to and ultimately will get back to, and he is still positive in his offense. And it's a broader story to like him being inserted into the starting lineup and what he's done for this group. And the fact that he's been helpful despite him not shooting at his level bodes well for when he does. And he's able to juice all of this. It's been more triple doubles and overall attacking for Jalen Johnson during the stretch. Dyson Daniels, I like sprinkled in some Dyson Daniels commentary since it was like the end of the Hawks seven when we talked about him last. But what a unique season he is having. One, happy birthday, Dyson Daniels, since we're recording on a Tuesday. But during the win streak, Steve, 11.6 points, 8.1 rebounds, 3 offensive rebounds per game during this stretch, 6.3 assists, 2.4 steals. He's shooting 59% from the field. Like, the three-point shooting is what it is. But the way that he has been used as a handoff hub, as a screener, as a transition threat, the way that some of these drives have looked for him, like, I still kind of chuckle, like, hey, brother, use your left hand sometimes. But in general, like, there's a level of snappiness that he's playing with that I think is helpful, especially if you're not going to be taking threes. I love how quick his decisions have been made, whether he is directly bringing the ball up and initiating action, or if he is someone that just kind of flashes above the wing or above the break and kind of gets them to the second side. Like, there was a possession in that game where Orlando's sprinkling in some early switching for Jalen Johnson led pick and roll. Ball goes to Dyson Daniels, immediate flip to Nikhil Alexander Walker. Immediate pocket pass from Nikhil Alexander Walker to Dyson Daniels for a layup. I'm just like, yeah, this is the kind of energy that he can inject into a possession when some of the switching may bog you down or when some of the tempo isn't as great to be. And so, like, I've been super impressed with what this Dyson stretch has been. And defensively, it's been fun, like, watching him toggle between, I will take on your toughest perimeter assignment. Sometimes Nikhil Alexander Walker do that, and I can just muck stuff up off the ball and fly around. And that's where you're seeing it in the steal and deflection numbers. But in general, he's been a super active presence at the nail, as he has generally been throughout his basketball career. It aids in this Atlanta Hawks defense, which is still performing at an incredibly high level, Steve. They're forcing turnovers at an incredibly high rate. That is led by Dyson Daniels, but all of these perimeter guys, they can kind of slide in. And then you kind of zoom out where Jalen's contributing, Nas contributing, CJ's contributing, Dyson contributing, Onyeka knocking down threes, as you mentioned, nearly 3 stops a game, under 3 fouls per game, which is insane considering the matchups and the size disadvantages that he's in sometimes. Jonathan Kuminga averaging 15 and 8 off the bench during the stretch. Like, they're getting a little bit
from everyone. Are you bought in on Jonathan Kuminga? Is that what you're telling me, mate?
I've been impressed with the rebounding in particular from him. And as I mentioned a while ago, like, this is the level of, I have the ball, I am making a quick decision. I am driving it, or I am passing it, or I am shooting it. I am not catching it, holding it super often. I will say there was one possession in the first half where he was just kind of seeking through switches from Orlando. And I think it was Austin Rivers. You could hear him on the broadcast saying, oh, this is going up, while Jonathan Kuminga had the ball. And then sure enough, it is a drive against Orlando big pump fake finish and one. And it was like, well, that's probably why Jonathan Kuminga's out there. Good call from the broadcast, but like, that was a funny play for me. But again, he continues to stack good plays. So I'm impressed with him and just with the Hawks in general. As you mentioned earlier, it is funny that they've gone on this win streak and they have moved up a spot because of what the Magic were doing.
They just moved up a spot. That's why.
And they just moved up.
Where am I supposed to be moved? We've done this segment at least 4 times this season. Salute to Atlanta Hawks, quality basketball team. It's the same song and dance. Do you think they beat Boston in a playoff series, Nick Eyes?
Do they beat Boston? Probably not. That's actually a question I wanted to ask you. Among the top 4, who do you think they match up best against?
No one. Do you think they beat Detroit?
That's not how that question works, though.
It is. That's how I answered it. Do you think they beat Detroit in the series?
I don't think they beat Detroit in a series. I will say that.
So if the segment is, is this real? No. you're trying to sell me on the secret lives of the Atlanta Hawks, and I don't want to watch it, even though they're a really good team. Wow, love to watch them play offense. I don't want that TV show.
I need you to be a little kinder to the Atlanta Hawks. This is
unbelievable. I just said they're really good. I've done this 3 times. What else is real? we're doing the thing where, ooh, look, this team won a whole bunch of games, and they're doing this, and then they stop doing it, and guess what? We don't talk about it. We've done this with the Hawks and the Raptors 17 times this season. So what else is real, guys?
How How did the Raptors catch a stray in there? Okay, well, salute to the Atlanta Hawks. Next five games at Dallas, Houston, Golden State, Memphis, then Steve mentioned Detroit next Wednesday. So we'll see what happens as the show goes on the road. As for other things that I want to ask you about, Steve, I wanted to ask you about the Victor Wembanyama MVP case. As Wimby was recently asked, or recently talked about his desire to win MVP and DPOY post-game after, I think, the Charlotte game, where, boy, did he get his get back against Charlotte after the first matchup, Musa Diabate ate his lunch, respectfully. Wimby had none of it. Two quick fouls in the first quarter for Musa. It was just a dominant effort for him on both ends. But Wimby said, right now, in my mind, is taking great care of my body because I also want to win MVP and Defensive Player of the Year. So I'm trying to press the gas now, from now to the end of the season, really take care of my treatment, take care of my sleep, take care of my routine, and show up for my team. He wants it. As of recording, Steve, he has played 53 of 68 games. So that's 77.9% of games. So, like, not quite qualified or not quite on pace yet, but I think he is a game or two away. Mm-hmm. But you zoom out, it's 24 points on 58, 36, 81 shooting splits, 11 boards, 3 assists, a steal, and 3 blocks a game that leads the league. He's third in EPM among that group that's played at least 50 games. He's first in defensive EPM, if you care about that. Is there a chance, you've already mentioned, like, he's going to be in your top five if he's healthy enough. Mm-hmm. How strong is the case for him to actually win the award right now?
Well, I mean, there are people that could not be eligible. And then you end up with a whole different discussion. And so I think for me, you got to evaluate his individual case. He's been incredible. And so it's very hard to point to the Spurs' success and not point to Victor Wembanyama and what he's been able to do on both ends on the court. Offensively, he's continued to grow. He's been a presence. He hurts you inside, outside, the drives, inverted pick and roll. I can get to my three. I can get to the lane. I can finish. But the defensive impact that he's had for that team consistently every single night to where, yeah, I'm in command of this defense. You don't really want to come in the paint. I'm going to find a way to get to the block. I'm going to make sure we're rotating around me. I'm going to communicate that. I can guard multiple positions. I can be in different places. I can do this every single night. And we have this base that you can trust when I'm in the game. Yes, no one really thought the Spurs would just be the runaway 2 seed. When we talk about the Western Conference 14 pack, you probably thought the Spurs would be in there somewhere and have a good year. They're clearly the number 2 team in the Western Conference. And it's very hard, you know, as good as Coach Johnson has been, as good as the guard play has been, as well they played as a team, everyone knows their role. It all orbits around Victor Wembanyama. And so I think he has a case no matter what. But if we're knocking on the door of, hey, Shea, looks like you didn't play enough games. Hey, Nikola Jokic, looks like you didn't play enough games. These people are going to have a really interesting conversation about old Victor Wembanyama now, aren't they?
Yeah, it gets funny. I think, like, even independent of that, like, 24, 11, 3, 1, and 3, insane efficiency, is going to be the front runner for Defensive Player of the Year if he's healthy enough. Like, that alone says you at least need to have a conversation about me in the top 3 and higher. The Spurs are 18-1 in the last 19 games that Wimby has played in. It's 25, 11, 3, 1, and 4 in those games. The thing that's killing me about this, Steve, complimentary, is like, this is Wimby putting up these numbers and having this impact. Like, how often does he play more than 30 minutes?
It's a good question.
Like, more rhetorical, to be clear. But it's just like, it's not like he's doing this playing 37 minutes a game, which would also be impressive, to be clear. But, like, he is wrecking stuff and piling up these kind of box score numbers while not having to, like, you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be a 40-minute affair for him. He's wrecking stuff in 30 minutes, in 3 quarters. It's like, well, we just can't get to the rim. We can't score at the rim when we do get there. And then offensively, what do we do with this dude? Like, we can be physical with him, but, like, he's not going to stop attacking. We can switch a bunch of stuff, but we're eventually going to have to send help because we don't want our guards on him. Then you look at some of the on-off stuff. I cited a little bit earlier in relation to Luka, but the Spurs with Victor Wembanyama on the floor per PvP stats, plus 15.1 per 100 possessions. With Shea on the floor for OKC, that's plus 14.6. Like, the Spurs are performing better than the Shea-led Thunder when Wimby is on the floor. That is insane. And the Spurs, technically, pretty much neutral, but, like, a minus 0.3 net rate. like the plus 15.4 overall for Wimby, that is higher than Shea, that is higher than Jokic, that is higher than Cade, that is higher than Jaylen Brown, that is higher than Donovan Mitchell. Like, it's wild. Like, this is getting louder for Victor Wembanyama. Even to your point about the Spurs being the clear number two, like they're right back to we're only three games behind OKC. And this is with OKC currently on an 8-game win streak right now. Like, it's not inconceivable that the Spurs close this gap before the year ends. If there's any sort of injury stuff with OKC, or just in general, if OKC hits a rough patch, close out the year. So, like, it's been a fun time. It's been a fun time. While we're on award stuff, Steve, where are we at on Kawhi Leonard and his All-NBA first team case? Because he, as mentioned a little bit earlier, he seems to be among the names that you could have a conversation about with this first team between Jokic and Wimby and Luka. Like, can Kawhi be five? Like, Kawhi versus Donovan Mitchell, Kawhi versus Jaylen Brown, Kawhi. How firm, like, what does that look like for you if he plays enough games? He's currently out with the ankle injury, but he is traveling on the road trip, so I think he's back soon. How heavily does Kawhi factor in?
You're asking the wrong person. You're doing the discourse with the wrong person. I've already revealed what my All-NBA first team would be if everyone is eligible. If someone is ineligible, Kawhi Leonard would be a name to definitely process and put as a candidate. I have him as an All-NBA second team rep because I do not have him in my top five for MVP. Thus, he would not be on my first team All-NBA. Where are you at with it, buddy?
Okay. No, understood. Like, I think your top five is pretty strong and pretty firm. I guess my broader question for you was going to be, outside of like Shea misses games or someone misses games, like, what is there a way that Kawhi could play himself over like Cade or play himself over Luka? Or is it just that is just the five no matter what at this point? Okay.
I mean, Luka maybe, but I mean, the Clippers turnaround has been fantastic. They're still 34-34. So, yeah. I mean, we've got some high-impact players and impacting winning and having great seasons. So, I mean, if they were the sixth seed right now, I'd probably be like, you know what? Let's talk about it. As great as the turnaround's been, as great as Kawhi has been, he's been lights out. I can't get the first team.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that's fair. That's fair. But I think for me, like, he is creeping towards the top of my list among like the second teamers and can get into that conversation for first team because he has just been nuts. And I should mention, as of recording, 53 games out of 68 played, so a little under 78%. So he's also a game or two away from being technically on pace to be eligible. So we still got to wait. And again, he's out with the ankle right now. But 28.3 points per game, 57% on twos, 38% on threes, 90 from the line, six boards, four assists, two steals, fourth in EPM. So like that would make the All-NBA first in case you want to use that. But he has been so good on both ends of the floor. And, like, it's been a different defensive season for him because it hasn't been your usual, oh, Kawhi is just guarding number ones and he's wrecking stuff. It has been more, I am the off-ball destroyer. And then when I need to guard this guy for a few possessions, I can also make life ugly for him too. But, like, the two-way impact has been there. He has been the biggest part of this turnaround for the Clippers. So I just kind of wanted to get the temperature check on where you were with Kawhi Leonard on that front. Can I toss one more your way, Steve?
Sure.
Circling back to the San Antonio Spurs, this is more free throw adjacent for me. How close is Stephon Castle to being the Spurs' second best player?
Very close. I still have Fox. I think Castle's three.
Okay.
Castle's two-way impact is very good. I think he doesn't – it helps that he doesn't have to carry – some of the weight because De'Aaron Fox exists. So he can be himself. He's been really patient, really good playmaking, really good defense. So, but I wouldn't necessarily give him the crown of the second best player because if you're defense, am I treating him like he's the second best player? Not really.
Okay. I think for me, like, I want to see what playoff Stephon Castle looks like. I think from a competitive standpoint, he is not going to be afraid of the moment or anything like that. It's just more so, what does he do against game plan defenses? Are we going to see even more of we're putting center on Stephon Castle, which mentioned the Memphis example earlier in this year. Other teams have tried it since then and it has not gone well for the other teams. Like that's a positive on the San Antonio side, but want to see like what that part looks like before I'm ready to go there. But the two-way impact is what's kind of making the case for me, Steve. Like I think if he's going to be a rim threat, if he has the mid-range scoring at the very least, to kind of offset how teams treat him beyond the three-point line and even to the three-point portion. Since the All-Star break, 39% from threes, only 3.5 attempts, so you want the volume to be a little bit higher. But, like, that is pretty solid. He is making teams pay more often. And over his last five games, 44% for 5.4 attempts. It's like, okay, this is interesting. Again, these are dare shots. He's making the dare shots. But if he's going to be this kind of threat inside the arc, if he's going to have these kind of playmaking chops with the turnovers going down from where they were earlier this year, and if he's going to defend a little bit of everybody on the other end and make a legitimate all-defense case, like, I don't think we're far off. I think it's fair to at least have the conversation. If even if, like, I'm with you, I still say Fox for now. I need to see a playoff run from Castle before I'm really ready to firmly stamp it. But it's a testament to how good he is and how good he's been this year, and especially how good he's been as of late, to where I'm like, hey, is it time to talk about this right now? Because he's kind of been, like, it's 22-7-8 over his last five. Like, it's, he's been wild. So just wanted
Can I throw one out there?
Yes.
Can I throw one last? Is this real out there?
Sure.
Well, actually, I have a definitive answer. You know what's real? This break we're about to take. Tune in for more Dunker Spot. We'll be right back.
And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. Going to close things out with more Team USA basketball talk. Two games since the last time we recorded, Steve. Two more big wins for Team USA, and that is setting the stage for later this afternoon. We got Team USA taking on Spain. Megan Gustafson, our found number one pick in this year's draft. Should be a fun front court battle at the very least. Excited to see that one a little bit later. But just want to circle back to the two games over the weekend. They beat Italy 93-59. They beat New Zealand 101-46. Oh, no Carol Lawson, who's returning back to Duke as the tournament is getting ready to start soon. So Nate Tibbetts, assistant on staff, got to coach these two games. We got two different starting lineups, two different rotation patterns in general, Steve. So just, I guess, to broaden the scope, is there anything in particular that stood out to you across these two games over the weekend?
Oh, no, we're starting with you, man. Because, you know, I heard you go on a different podcast after we spoke about Team USA, and I spoke about the versatility of the bigs, and you wanted to see small ball. And so we had Team USA Nate's edition. And so I want to see your thoughts and hear them spoken to me. What did you think of the decision to go with smaller lineups here, bud? What were your thoughts on this version of Team USA?
You know, Steve, I was intrigued because we had seen through the first two games a lot of double big alignments with some sprinkling of Ryan Howard at the four. It's like, okay, well, this is interesting. As we talked about on the last pod, like, okay, what is some of these flares and what do the rescreens look like? What does some of the spacing look like in the half court with the double big alignment? And so for Nate Tibbetts to come off rip and say, you know what, we're starting smaller. Chelsea Gray, Jackie Young, Kalia Copper, Ryan Howard, De'Erica Hamby, come on down. And you immediately see pace pick up a little bit. The spacing felt a little bit cleaner. Certainly wasn't perfect, but the spacing did feel a little bit cleaner. You saw the speed and transition pop a little bit more. I think De'Erica Hamby in particular really enjoyed across both of these games, honestly. Even though you saw her more paired with a big in the New Zealand game than you did in the Italy game. But just quicker decision-making, I think cleaner pockets for the roles, playmaking pop a little bit more. So like I was intrigued by seeing more space. And ultimately, with them trending smaller, you also got to see the full court pressure ramp up even more than we'd seen in the first two games. And so the defense popped a little louder for me. I will say on the downside, if you're going smaller, if there were any kind of defensive miscues or if they were able to, or if they switched into some unfavorable matchups for them, the defensive rebounding got a little hazy sometimes. So when they grabbed them, the transition opportunities were fruitful. When they were not, it's like, uno, extra opportunities, you get some of the fouls. Like that got kind of hazy. And that was something that on the other pod, I brought up like, hey, if I'm trying to pick at like a yellow or an orange flag for Team USA, it's just keeping an eye on what their defensive rebounding looks like in light of some of the overhelps and some of the miscues that we've seen from them defensively. But I really enjoyed how fast and aggressive they played overall with some of those smaller lineups. I think it really popped in the Italy game. It popped in like the second quarter onward, really, in the New Zealand game. But like those were kind of my initial impressions at the very least. How did you feel about some of the lineup shifts over these last two?
Well, I mean, I think it just speaks to the versatility of Team USA overall. And so I think being able to do multiple things, do different things is important for them. And I think leaning into the small lineup did open some different things up. I thought Italy at the start of that game was very good and patient at getting to their next action and willing to throw it in the post. And if you're going to strictly be small, mm-hmm. that does open you up to, hey,
to the post
we can do some post-ups. We can get some rebounds. But overall, I mean, we talked about it last time. The defensive activity has been fantastic. So they got pressure. They're flying around. They're rotating. I don't necessarily think it has to be a small lineup that makes it even better. But because it's a small lineup, you now can lean more into the switching, be more decisive. And so you kind of have the yin and the yang of it. So that's where it was pretty fun. But also offensively, now we open ourselves up to some different possibilities and probabilities, and Caitlin Clark is able to operate in space. And you've got Jackie Young. Mate, it's Jackie Young. You know what I mean? You got Kalia Copper getting downhill. You got Plum. So, I mean, it was interesting to see kind of some of the different combinations they rolled through, especially in that Italy game where it's like, hey, that's Caitlin Clark and that's Paige and that's Kelsey Plum. Is that Chelsea Gray out there as well? Okay, so we're just going to space the floor and make plays and do different things. And I think having the ability to have a team that, okay, we can go double big, we can really, really make it tough on you defensively, but also we can emphasize our offense if we'd like to and make it so where you can't mm-hmm. really guard us. And so them finding their way offensively throughout, I think, those two games leading into the small lineups, I think that was important just to kind of have a variety to know, okay, when we advance or when we have all of our components or when we have even more people that is possible, we can kind of sprinkle mm-hmm. different things in and have that in our base.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think the overall versatility is going important here. I think the other thing that I want to bring up, especially in relation to them going more single big over these two games, and particularly in the Italy game, is, now I went to bring this up more just on Friday as a concept, both here and the other pod, but like Angel getting an opportunity to play more at the five, I think is good for her developmentally. I think the best version of her, as we've seen on the high end in the qualifier so far, someone that can fly around defensively, can play at the level, can fly to play the cat and mouse game, can come all the way out and hedge if necessary, force turnovers, get out in transition. And if you're using her as a screener and roller around four guards in some of these lineups, as you mentioned earlier, that's a lot of space for her to roll into. That should help the finishing pop even more, but more so defensively for me. Like, okay, if you are now the only big on the floor, what do these reps look like? How locked in are you? And just in general, like getting more reps at the five, where you look at the Chicago Sky team, you're like, it's mostly her plus Camilla Cardoso, or her plus Elizabeth Williams. You know, go back the year before last, her plus Izzy Harris. You know, she's been paired with another big a bunch. I think if Angel can get more reps at the five and showcase that she can handle it on both ends of the floor, or more so defensively than anything, that opens up some lineup stuff for when she's back in the W. It opened up some fun lineup opportunities for the Sky. And I think even for her individual projection, if she can firmly just be a five for longer stretches, like that just adds more value, period. Because I think that that mitigates some of the offensive concerns that you may have if she's not paired with another big.
I disagree. I think the best version of Angel is the ability to do both. I think when she's at her most impactful defensively is I can do all of these things defensively. So I can mm-hmm. switch. And we've seen that be mixed in. I can be at the level. I can be dropped back. So I can do this at the four. I can also do this at the five because I'm locked on exactly what I have to do. And so I think mm-hmm. if she's able to have the best of both worlds and just find a consistency defensively as far as being able to rotate through coverages, she'll be fine no matter what position a team puts her in. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's fair. I guess I'm not arguing that like she is only going to like provide value at the five. It's more so like, can she do more of that? So to your point, she can do both. I think right now, I think she is firmly better at the four than the five right now. But that's why I think like the five reps matter. That's more so what I was trying to convey on that front. I think, but I hear you. What did I say as I was going through my notes at the moment? Oh, other thing I wanted to bring up as we talk about these other two games. But welcome to the rotation, Ray Burrell, who has mostly just kind of been in these fourth quarters with the games out of hands. You get to see the energy and stuff. Her just firmly being in the first half rotation, and you get to see, oh, she guards a little bit of everyone, and she can add it to this full court pressure. Offensively, you may get the random crashes for the corner still with offense rebounding, or at least getting into the fray and kind of playing into those tap outs. Or I am just putting my head down and putting you underneath the basket with drives. And then some of the catch and shoot shot making on top of that. Like, it was just nice to see her. I think she earned this opportunity. Like, her and Monique Billings, again, coming from the unrivaled season right into the camp, into these games. I think it's been a unique opportunity for both of them. Monique has just played well throughout these four games. I guess I want to say that as well as we kind of zoom out. Which leads me to another question, Steve, or another pair of questions mm-hmm. to close this out. So, number one, we've got four games under the belt. Again, we get the Spain game a little bit later today. Has been mm-hmm. Team USA's best player through these first four games?
Who's been their best player? I mean, it's hard to not say. That's a hard question to answer because I think as a unit, they've all been great together. Mm-hmm. Everyone's had their moments. Everyone's flashed well. Kalia Copper in a Team USA uniform was like a 97 overall. Like, Derek Amos been active. Chelsea Gray's been Chelsea Gray. Jackie Young, mate, has been great. KP's done a job. I'm gonna go Caitlin Clark. Okay. I think it's been some real good. Hey, what are you gonna do with me? Precisely, mm-hmm. like I pass and cut, whatever. I can get to my step back. I'm manipulating all of you in transition. The defense is kind of holding up unless I foul. I'm gonna give the nod to Caitlin Clark. I think it's been a really impressive showing for her. What say you? You know, okay. I have a guess. I already know it's gonna be. You're gonna say Ryan Howard, aren't you?
I sure am going to say Ryan Howard. You know your podcast co-host. I tell you what, absolute has bombed away from three. Some of the drives and playmaking has popped up, not to the dream volume, but like in those stretches, you see it. And defensively, she's everywhere, Steve. Like the on-ball shot blocking and some of the weak side stuff. She's taking on guard assignments, depending on what lineup she's in. And she's handled that well. She's been part of the pressure package for Team USA as well. Like, it has just been a really strong two-way effort for Ryan. And she's been incredibly efficient on time. And so, Caitlin has also been very good. Paige has been very good. Like, as you mentioned, like, it's been a collective Team USA effort, which is ultimately what you want. But I would give the nod to Ryan, which leads to the question that I really wanted to get into, Steve. Have any of these, how many of these like firmly played themselves into like the 28 Olympic conversation? Because for me, as I was kind of thinking about it, I think there are three spots up for sure compared to the 24 Olympic squad. Like, Diana Taurasi has retired. I don't mm-hmm. think Brittany Griner is going to be there in 28, and I don't think Jewel Loy is going to be there in 28. And so I kind of stopped at those three because, again, there's the, like, does Chelsea want to do it? Like, there's going to be crowded guard room, et cetera. So you can get to, like, five spots being up in the air, but I limit it to three. And so if you had three, which three players are taking those spots as of today? We got 2 years, but as of today, who would you say who would be the three players to get those spots?
Oh, you're only giving me three?
Yeah.
Three for a promote? Caitlin Clark, Paige Beckers, Angel Reese.
Ooh, okay. I had a really tough time parsing through this. Because my initial thought was like, okay, well then, yeah, we're going to get Caitlin, we're going to get Paige, and we're probably going to get Aaliyah Boston, who didn't get to do it, isn't playing right now because of the ankle, or lower body injury, rather. But like, they're going to want size in the center room, et cetera, et cetera. Then it's like, crap, there's Angel, there's Ryan, who I think, as I just said, has been the best player in the mix. So like, Ryan feels like she's also firmly played herself in. I was like, ooh, Christ, I don't know what I'd do with this. I would say the first three in for me is probably Caitlin, Paige, Ryan. Especially if you're anticipating in the front court already for Team USA, you're going to have Asia, you're going to have Fee, you're going to have Stewie. And potentially Alyssa Thomas. But again, that could be a spot that opens up later. We'll see. But I went perimeter-based early on, but like, man, I think Angel's going to be on the team. I think Leah Boston is going to be. It's a tight field. But wanted to see where you were on that front, Steve. With that, we bid the Dunkers adieu. Thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of the Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We're on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel if you haven't already. You can follow me on socials at Nikias NBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Bye!